Join us Mondays, 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern in Studio B at Revolution.radio.
Moscow's freeze. That's your cerebral cortex looking for an answer it doesn't have.
See? Even your brain knows you're screwed.
Your body's filling with adrenaline right now. Whether you know it or not. The heart's beating fast. It's getting a little harder to breathe. The neurobiological system is telling it to run. But your knees are too weak to move.
Fear is not real. The only place that fear can exist is in our thoughts of the future. It is a product of our imagination, causing us to fear things that do not at present and may not ever exist. That is near insanity. Do not misunderstand me. Danger is very real, but fear is a choice. We are all telling ourselves a story.
Listening to Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. 100% listener-supported radio. Reporting the danger. Unafraid. Right here, where information never sleeps. Revolution. Revolution. Radio!
They can be a bit of inspiration in my radio career.
You must be some kind of a kook.
Thank you.
It's hard out here for a pimp.
All right, listen up, y'all.
A bunch of a-holes.
Where are you going to go? Where are you going to run? Where are you going to hide?
Ladies and gentlemen, may I have your attention, please?
Check your systems are all gone.
Hashtag's confused, dude.
What kind of feeling? I'm high on believing that you're in love with me.
I'm not good enough for that.
Central, 403 Mountain, 303 West Coast, 604 East Coast. Good evening, Iceland. Happy Tuesday, Australia. Welcome to the award-winning, but yet to be nominated, This, That, and the Other, heard every Monday and Thursday here on Revolution Radio. Common spelling, freedomslips.com. Again, freedomslips.com in your favorite internet browser. Tonight, kids, it's UFOs. In Bigfoot, nonstop action. Sit back, grab your popcorn, a beverage of your choice, because some of us will be probed and perhaps abducted.
Once you stick and take a front fender off and put it on the back there, they need to know where it broke off.
Sit back.
Procedure.
Okay, verify SRC pussy bitch.
What are those things going over? What is that, Jack? Hey, something just hit here. What's blue? Hey, what is that? Just gets flying over the top of our head.
What the hell is that thing?
I saw this huge saucer-shaped vehicle.
I've never seen anything like that before.
It wasn't blinking or nothing. It was just like a ball of light.
Whoa.
It's got three triangular lights.
Well, if there's like... It's rotating.
It's extremely quiet. It's definitely not an airplane or a helicopter. I don't know what that was.
For decades, UFO witnesses were laughed at. They're just told that they can't talk about it. We don't want to hear about it. Maybe you're a little crazy if you even saw it.
Yo, whatever that is, that's huge.
But we're at a place right now where we are beginning to realize how strange it is and how little we really understand. Imagine if it was acknowledged officially that UFOs exist. That would be a big paradigm shift.
Intelligence agencies have 6 months to release all the information they have on UFOs. It's part of a $2.3 trillion bill signed back in December. The report needs to contain analysis of any UFO data as well as name any possible security threats that they pose.
Thousands of newly declassified documents on UFOs from the CIA now accessible on the internet. And you can thank a UFO enthusiast for that massive dump of docs now known as Black Vault.
With the passing of this bill, a lot of people think this is it. This is when the government and the military is going to come out and reveal the truth behind what these UFOs or UAP are.
It seemed like they were aware of our presence because they would actively move around us.
We know that there was a UFO research program. We know they enlisted scientists, people that could look at this information, whether it be witness testimony, photographs, or film reels. There is so much to dig into.
What we've been doing is simply looking for flying objects that are where they're not supposed to be. But on the one in a million chance that it really is ET, we kind of want to know that too.
I think the media's attention to the UFO topic absolutely fueled then the public's response for demanding answers, for demanding action, and to encourage senators like Marco Rubio to say, hey, this phenomena is real, you should investigate it. Tell them it's a threat, tell them that it's encroaching on military installations. All of a sudden, you got that Senate Committee on Intelligence pretty darn interested on what intelligence can be gathered, and they're 100% on board trying to get to it. December of 2017, the New York Times really put the reality of what they called a UFO research program out there into the cosmos, and people ate this up. That was one of the biggest stories, if not the biggest story, that the New York Times digital edition ever had.
I've been writing for many years about unconventional phenomena, large mysteries that really intrigue me, but are not usually covered by journalists. It's not easy to get the New York Times to cover a subject that's not fully documented, particularly if it's an issue like this, where politicians, although they may be interested, they're afraid to deal with it.
A recent report by the New York Times unveiled the existence of a real-life X-Files department. It's a five-year secret government program to investigate mysterious flying objects.
The Pentagon now confirms the existence of a secretive UFO program tasked with investigating reports of unidentified flying objects.
Tens of millions of dollars for the project were pushed through by former Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid. The New York Times says Reid acknowledged to them that he and two other senators did not want public debate on the Senate floor over this program.
Real UFOs, Pentagon unit tried to know. Pretty amazing. the Department of Defense had a program called the Advanced Aerospace Threat Identification Program, and we all call it ATIP, which is the acronym. They had had this program since 2007, whose purpose was to study UFOs. The funding was not made public, so nobody knew about it. This is the first time it was on the record. What instigated the whole thing was the fact the director of the program resigned in October, 2 months before the story came out. I was fortunate enough to have a meeting with him literally the day he resigned or the day after, and he wrote a powerful letter to the Secretary of Defense, James Mattis, at the time, explaining why he was leaving, which had to do with the fact that there were not enough resources provided for what he considered to be a national security issue.
Do you believe that life from somewhere else, while you ran this program, came here, visited, observed?
There is very compelling evidence that we may not be alone, whatever that means.
After our story came out, there started to be briefings for various committees in Washington. The New York Times has a huge impact. It opens the door for things to happen.
I wondered if the president will show his degree of transparency on this issue.
I'm not aware of any plans the president has to make public any information about this.
I would be interested in knowing if there's some other people here.
I don't believe it, Dan.
I believe it.
UFOs? Any UFOs? Did you ask about that?
I've certainly asked about it.
And?
Can't tell you. Sorry.
Okay. All right, I'll take that as a yes. Because if there were none, you'd say there was none, right?
feel free to think that.
I do.
I remember when I woke up the day it came out, it was a bombshell, right? That's what it was. I'm a research professor, and I research the connections between technology and religious belief, among other things. That article just electrified the whole environment of the study. I got phone calls from Harvard. I got phone calls from Princeton, from academics everywhere.
What is that?
These are things that academics don't want to touch.
My gosh, they're all going against the wind.
We have scientists who studied the phenomena anonymously to keep their careers intact, frankly.
Scientists have a problem discussing the possibility of extraterrestrial intelligence. It's out of the mainstream, and it should not be.
It's almost like the Invisible College. Back in the 1500s, the Invisible College was a word for the scientists like Francis Bacon, who were kind of making headway, but the church would kill them if they knew what they were doing, right?
There it is.
People who study the phenomena won't talk to each other about it. They just won't. And so I thought, what is that? And I thought, you know, it's really like Fight Club, that movie from the 1990s with Brad Pitt and Edward Norton. You've got this guy who starts this cult movement, right? And they don't talk about it. First rule of Fight Club, don't talk about Fight Club. And with UFO events, I found it again and again and again and again. And it was pervasive. So there's no longer an invisible college. It's a fight club.
I think it's important for people to understand that most sightings of what people call UFOs can be explained. I mean, if you have people out at night and they see something weird in the sky and they might report it, well, the authorities can find out, was there a weather balloon in the sky that day at that location? Only a small percentage of sightings can't be explained. We need to do proper investigations. I think it's irresponsible, it's dangerous to just ignore it. It's really disrespectful to the witnesses. The best example of this is the Phoenix Lights case.
It is very rare for thousands of people to call and report seeing the same lights in the same spot at the same time.
Unlike a lot of the cases that we take very seriously, this one was about people, massive numbers of people. and a lot of people were calling the National UFO Reporting Center.
UFO watchers are calling it a dramatic event.
There's another one, too.
Where? Whoa, look at them.
I got that.
Wait, I can't see how this works.
Shit. Aliens, first thing that I thought. It scared the heck out of me.
It was a UFO.
We saw five lights in a row.
It looked like some kind of geometric drawing.
It was as big as a football field, at least.
As I was coming up the hill, I didn't know what it was.
You heard nothing.
What do you think it is?
I think it was a spaceship of some sort.
There's a lot of mystery behind us and a lot of unanswered questions that no one wants to talk about.
What? What is it? Can you see it?
We're still talking about it because of the after effects that the people who experienced it are still having.
Interview 5710, camera A, B, C, D, mark.
I remember I'd been listening to the news and people were reporting lights over Phoenix, and turned to my wife and said, you know, I'm going to go take my car and I'm going to go drive to Squaw Peak to see if I can see what all the hullabaloo is about. There were a whole bunch of people in the park and everybody's sort of looking for the lights. Then somebody said, holy cow, look at that. And so I turned around and this great big delta-shaped thing came out of the northwest and headed down into the southeast valley.
They're lined up in a pattern, man. There's geometry behind this.
Yeah. It was really eerie. It had embedded lights. I always refer to it as otherworldly. I'd never seen anything like it.
There's one behind the chimney.
Major sighting here.
Couldn't hear it. Not being able to hear it.
Yeah, it was eerie.
Was eerie to me. Mm-hmm. That something in the air moving at that size, completely still, freaked me out.
And then did it just disappear like it was gone?
Lights flickered.
And people saw it in Tucson minutes later.
Yeah.
Like, so that's how fast
minutes
it was.
Later.
Yeah.
Some believe the lights were flares. Some believe they were a secret military aircraft. And others believe they were spaceships.
City Councilwoman Frances Emma Barwood is the only city official to look for answers.
I had assumed that this event was already being investigated, and I was told that nobody would touch it. Come on. Good.
I have a hard time letting things drop that aren't finished. I always want answers. I was going to a city council meeting May 6th of 1997. I was stopped by a reporter, and she asked me if I knew about this object that flew over Phoenix on March 13th. And she said, could you ask at the council meeting? When it came my turn for a council request, I told them about the reporter, and could we find out whatever this object was?
Kind of curious, especially since people are starting to ask more questions.
Everybody turned around and looked at me, and it was like, did I say something wrong?
Thank you. Thanks, Councilman Siebert.
How can this be swept under the rug? What are they all afraid of?
It was a fairly tumultuous time for me politically, and I certainly didn't want to pour any kerosene on the fire. So the next day, I'd kept my mouth shut. I just decided to lock it away and not talk about it. It just seemed to be the prudent thing to do. I didn't need to stand up and say, hey, I've seen it. You have thousands of other people who stood up and said they've seen it. The story was out there.
Are we alone? No, I don't mean just you and me. I mean this Earth. Have we had some visitors recently? The buzz is very big in the desert southwest, where it's really never gone away after some weird happenings in the skies over Phoenix recently.
Phoenix Councilwoman Frances Emma Barwood says she now gets stacks of mail from across the country detailing similar sightings.
There's no doubt in my mind that they saw something really phenomenal. Why isn't anybody else curious? I mean, why am I the only elected official that wanted to find out about it?
strange dots of light that were the talk of the town.
A mass statewide UFO sighting.
As a result of the kind of uproar that occurred, it was sort of like all the citizens suddenly woke up. And so there was all this pressure on Governor Fife Symington to do something.
Today, in a very surprising move, Governor Symington said he was going to do something to find out what was going on.
You're a governor. Your highest duty is to the citizens who elected you to office and to protect them if there's some danger and demand answers.
Many of our citizens have been very disturbed by this. In response, I suggested that it was time to end months of speculation on the question and investigate the matter once and for all to clear it up.
If the authorities don't know what it is, they should say. And if they do know, they are accountable to the public and they better cough up an answer.
We made serious inquiries asking the Air Force, what did you find? And we never got a satisfactory explanation. The most interesting one was the Warthogs, the A-10s, that they said had dropped flares.
The National Guard says it was conducting flare exercises outside Phoenix that night.
Our A-10 Thunderbolts that are right behind me were on a night illumination exercise.
I mean, I'm a pilot. I knew they weren't flares. Flares don't do what those lights were doing. Plus, the problem with that was the timing. The Air Force said that the A-10s were out there at about 10 o'clock. But the lights were at around 8:30 or something.
What took place here was far different than what the Air National Guard says took place. This happened over a period of hours all over the state.
So the official response was completely bogus. But a governor has no power over the Air Force or Luke Air Force Base to do anything more than ask a lot of questions. That's all you could do, you know? Sometimes very difficult dealing with the federal government.
Senator John McCain was asked about this. People would write him letters and call his office.
Why don't they come clean and say, we don't know or we do know? That's all we want to know.
John McCain asked the Air Force if they would conduct an investigation and was told that they don't investigate UFOs, which was about as far as he could go as a public official.
Did you talk to Senator McCain?
Yes. McCain was very open to it being an unidentified flying object. So I asked the Air Force, what did you find? And they said they didn't find anything, so. There have been reports that several aircraft took off from Luke Air Force Base in hot pursuit with afterburner and tried to intercept whatever the lights were.
It almost flew over me. And as soon as the jets got to the object, this thing like shot straight up and vanished right in front of my eyes. And that was really what put me over the edge there when I saw that.
It's hard to believe that something can be in our airspace that the government is not aware of. No matter what level it is in the Air Force, the government is supposed to be in charge.
Let me set the tape and I'll put a timer on. For the record, it's Friday, the 14th of March, 97. I'm talking with a gentleman who's just calling from Phoenix. Okay, sir, go ahead.
At 8:15, that Luke Air Force Base, the two F-15s that we keep on regular, they were launched because all hell broke loose, basically.
The jets that were taken off from Luke Air Force Base, you don't scramble jets just from somebody calling in to the police station. And they weren't flares.
They encountered something over the sky, over Phoenix, Arizona. They don't know what it was. One of the pilots stated that they had a visual on it. They've got a gun camera film of it. They have no radar tape of it. It scared the hell out of them. I've never seen a Sam scared.
Those two pilots get out of their aircraft and they're shaken because their gun-ready camera was filming something they've never saw before.
He saw five distinct lights in a triangular pattern. He doesn't know if it was one aircraft or several aircraft. He was scared to death. He's not sure what it was. After they landed, the base was, he had a complete lockdown. The facility was closed.
With UFOs, nothing is ever black and white. There's always mud in the water of trying to figure out some of these stories. There's half a century of secrecy relating to this. And so I started researching the United States government connection to what UFOs were.
On flying saucers, do you yourself believe that they exist?
Well, I'm positive they exist. The weight of the evidence makes it impossible to arrive at any other conclusion.
It started way back in 1947. There were UFO fleets that were being seen above the skies of Washington. People were scared.
Tonight, we go after a fantastic story. The story that flying saucers from other worlds are visiting our planet.
There were so many sightings, and the Air Force just didn't know what to do about it.
The Air Force interest in this problem has been due to our feeling of an obligation to identify and analyze to the best of our ability anything in the air that may have the possibility of threat or menace to the United States.
There was this aim to truly investigate UFOs.
There have been reports that have been made by credible observers of relatively incredible things.
The Air Force Office of Special Investigations created Project Grudge, Project Sign, and then later Project Blue Book in 1952 to investigate and ultimately explain them.
Project Blue Book was set up with a public office where citizens could contribute reports of sightings. So you had all these witnesses.
I looked up and to my right, I saw a large ball of fire. The object at a very rapid rate of speed.
You have people experiencing something that they don't quite understand. These experiences impact these people, impacts the way that they live their lives.
Two small lights appeared to me at the outer edges of the object, glowing in a bluish green light and intensifying.
Lots and lots and lots of people, a lot of very, you know, intelligent and successful people believe and see UFOs. Researchers in contact with some of the people still today decide to look at the effects. What if thousands of people saw it? You know, what kind of effects would they have? What would that do to our culture? UFO, for want of a better word, this phenomenon becomes somehow a new form of religiosity. It created true believers.
It was 1:40 a.m. Deputy Sheriff Val Johnson was on patrol in rural Marshall County when suddenly he saw a bright light a few feet above ground level, 2 miles down the road.
I traveled about a mile, and the light seemed to intercept me, so to speak. Came right upon me. It was painful. The light was extremely brilliant and painful. I closed my eyes, and I heard the sound of breaking glass, and that's the last I remember.
Johnson was unconscious for 40 minutes before he radioed for help and was taken to the hospital. A doctor and later an eye specialist confirmed that Johnson had suffered mild welder or flash burns to his eyes. Even stranger, both Johnson's wristwatch and the electric clock in his patrol car had mysteriously stopped for 14 minutes.
It's truly unexplainable to me, or unknown to me.
UFO sightings blew up in a way that no one truly expected. Going back to the space race of the 60s, the astronauts that were going up for the first time, they were seeing stuff that they just couldn't explain.
Hey, what is that? Just kept flying over the top of our head.
It didn't stop in the 1960s either. Today, there are many NASA videos that have these mysterious and unknown objects. There are a growing number of cases that don't have a logical explanation. And from the beginning, the government had to squash it. In the early 1950s, the CIA was starting to see that there was a much bigger national security implication behind what UFOs were. Whether or not they were alien at this point really was irrelevant. They knew that the excitement that the general public had, that in itself could create a risk. A group of scientists put together by the CIA analyzed all of the UFO data that the United States Air Force collected, and they said, are we looking at a phenomena that's real? Is this something that we should worry about, and what should we do about it?
The committee concluded that in the 19 years since the first UFO was sighted, there has been no evidence that unidentified flying objects are a threat to our national security.
Project Blue Book, which lasted all the way through 1969, was not to investigate anything. It was rather to explain it, to say, look, you guys think you don't understand this, but we do. We're the all-powerful government. We're the all-powerful CIA. We can explain this.
Some of the explanations they gave were so ludicrous that it was essentially like ridicule.
I cannot prove in a court of law that marsh gas is the full explanation of these sightings. But it does appear to me extremely likely.
Are you saying, Doctor, that Michigan is now producing non-existent saucers?
Well, it's one way of putting it, I suppose.
It just became part of the cultural way of dealing with this, unfortunately.
The National Guard says it was conducting flare exercises outside Phoenix that night.
You were considered to be crazy just for reporting something that was actually happening. It was completely irrational.
Tales of aliens have been our first conspiracy tales. They were our first way of questioning whether the government was in fact lying to us on a mass scale. Not just the Roswell story, which is obviously the most famous one, but you have a number of other incidents like that in the 1950s, just as the Cold War is starting, we start to see more an increasing prevalence, not just of UFO narratives, but of spy narratives, of the sense that the government is acting with duplicity.
This is absolutely untrue. We are not hiding anything. We have nothing to hide.
The rise of lack of faith in the government to tell us the truth coincides with the expansion of mass media in a way where we're suddenly receiving our information about the world through the television, through the radio.
One thing is clear. You could not keep a spaceship a secret. Too many journalists could not be restrained from trumpeting one of the greatest news stories of all time.
And so whatever authority the mainstream that has long denied the existence of these beings had slowly began to slip away. Eventually, that authority breaks down completely with the internet.
I got it.
Oh, my gosh.
Oh.
What the hell?
I think that we are, as a people, willing to believe almost anything. Conspiracy theories or myth can take hold using the possibility of UFOs existing as a way of doubting almost everything in our culture. The fact that our government is now slowly doling out information concerning potential evidence of alien existence, I think only feeds into those narratives.
The United Airlines employees who swear it was something otherworldly in the skies above Chicago's O'Hare Airport on November 7th, but neither the FAA nor indeed their own employer appears to be taking them seriously.
The O'Hare incident is a really important case.
Our number one story in the countdown, unidentified flying objects from outer space.
The story broke in the Chicago Tribune in January, so it was about 2 months later.
Chicago Tribune interviewing several people anonymously, including maintenance workers, baggage handlers, and pilots, who each and all described a dark gray saucer-like object that hovered low over concourse before shooting off into the sky.
Most UFO sightings are fairly quick. Something flies by, right? This was at least 5 minutes in the middle of the afternoon rush hour in the daylight. Pilots on the ground in their planes who were just taxiing in or out were leaning out, looking at it. There was a lot of radio chatter about it.
She got trapped here about 1:30 to 2 o'clock. It's very bright, doesn't seem to be moving, just change the color. The whole thing is a star. It looks like it's about 8 or 10 miles west.
One of the managers from United Airlines called the tower and said, do you see that there's this disc shape, objects up there? And it's a very interesting conversation.
Tower, this is Dave.
Hey, Dave, it's from United Tower.
Listen.
Hey, did you see a flying disc out by C-17?
It was starred, Sue.
No.
You're seeing flying discs.
Well, that's what the pilot and the ramp guys are telling us. The C-17, they saw some flying disc above it. We can't see
above us. Come on, Sue.
You didn't see it, right?
At one point, he says, no, I don't see it, and if I did, I wouldn't report it anyway.
Are you having a Christmas party today? I have not seen anything, Sue. And if I did, I wouldn't admit to it. No, I have not seen any flying disc at Gate C7. No, I have not seen anything, Sue.
The woman who called up called a second time, and she had to explain, I'm not high, I haven't been drinking. There's this disc-shaped object, it's actually there. But that conversation is very interesting because it shows the attitude of this. I mean, this was a safety hazard.
Gateway 5668.
5668, go ahead.
Yeah, look out your window. Do you see anything above United's concourse? They actually, believe it or not, they called us and said there's flying disc about 1,000 feet above Gate Charlie 17. Do you see anything over there?
Not that I can tell. We saw it a half hour ago.
Who saw it?
A whole bunch of us over at the Charlie concourse.
Really? You guys did? Who's this?
The United Taxi Mechanic.
The explanation that was provided by the FAA, first they said it was a weather phenomenon. By a weather phenomenon, they were probably referring to what's called a hole punch cloud. And this is a picture of a hole punch cloud. Ice crystals that fall from one cloud to a cloud below, like a cloud bank below, and then they melt a hole in the ice. I mean, it's an absurd notion to think that these aviation people would look up at something like that and think that was a metallic disc hovering over the airport, you know. The pilots from United Airlines, the employees, they were clear that they were not supposed to talk about this. Literally not one witness to this event would put their names on the record. Not one.
The FAA is still pinning this to some kind of weather phenomenon, that some lights from the airport and the overcast skies somehow got together and created this image. But weather experts, astronomy experts, others that I've talked to said that that's bunk.
Somebody has an obligation within the government. If it's not the FAA, it's got to be someone else to deal with that, to protect the aircraft that are around it, to find out what it is.
It seems to me that the likeliest conclusion here is that the aliens have landed many years ago in this country, in this world, with one goal in mind, to create conspiracy theories and then just sit back and enjoy them.
The acronym UFO has come to be a real loaded term. Unidentified flying object. That's all it means. The question, do you believe in UFOs? Really doesn't make any sense. There's no issue of belief there. The question is maybe, what do you believe they are? But whether they exist is not even a matter of belief, it's a fact.
On the record, the Arizona National Guard, who would know about military exercises and stuff, says it has no explanation at all for those lights. It doesn't look like anything that I've seen.
Yeah, I haven't seen anything either. Not picking anything
strange
up in the weather center either.
Yeah. You say the craft was moving very slowly and without any sound at all. The people that saw that believe what they saw was an alien spacecraft. Now Governor Symington himself has launched an official investigation.
The video that I saw a quick glimpse of was intriguing. So I'm going to order a full investigation of this through DPS. We're going to make all the necessary inquiries and we're going to get to the bottom of it. We're going to find out if it was a UFO.
If you can sit down, just put a little bit of the D-shine on you, if that's okay.
Okie doke.
You know, one of the things that you notice about media is they have some favorite foods. One of those is sex scandal, and another one is UFOs. We had phone calls coming in from all over the world.
It was huge across, and they were bright lights.
It was just so bright, I saw five bright luminous objects in a straight line heading south.
We realized we weren't really going to be able to satisfy people's longings for answers. We didn't really hold adequate means of investigating it as a state government apparat.
But you decided to launch your own investigation.
Yeah, we had so many people that we sat with and talked to, and they all described exactly the same thing.
About how many people was it?
That I talked to, and well, I talked, it was around 700, you know, total.
She interviewed 700 people. That sounds like an overwhelming task. Did you remember her investigating it?
No, I'm not sure how she would have the wherewithal.
How would she have the wherewithal?
Interview 700 people, or what of any real value you would glean from that?
That's probably what he would have to say. What else is he going to say? Is he going to say, oh yeah, I should have looked into it, when he didn't?
He really couldn't step up. Probably he feels bad that she did and was taken to grief.
The ridicule started almost immediately. This cartoon was published by the Arizona Republic.
They saw how much ridicule I got. Maybe that's why they didn't want to do that.
And so therefore, the best thing to do is to put it to bed. And how do you put things to bed? You ridicule anybody that's involved, so you try to kill the story. That's what happened to so-called Phoenix Lights.
That's right. Now, the governor is holding a press conference at this very moment. In fact, at the state capitol, reportedly, he says that the DPS has already turned up startling new information about this case.
The governor had called an emergency news conference. The only time you do an emergency news conference is when it's a threat to life, health, and all that stuff.
But you did launch a Department of Public Safety investigation.
Yes, definitely, yeah.
It would be great to talk about that press conference.
You know, you'd have to remind me, I'm since so long ago. You have the advantage of having the record in front of you. I just remember kind of the highlights and the impetus for the what I call the alien caper. And
we can play it to jog your memory.
Sure.
I issued a call for an investigation by the Arizona Department of Public Safety, and I'm happy to report we already are getting results. Let me just say that I believe it a serious offense for anyone, human, space alien, or otherwise, to engage in mysterious activity in our nighttime skies.
I thought, oh good, he's going to investigate.
We may all look upon the guilty party. And don't get him too close to me, please. It's, you know. Now, this just goes to show that you guys are entirely too serious. Thank you. Thank you.
Everybody was so angry, and I said, I don't know what to tell you. You know, it's over.
Mocked everybody. Mocked, you gotta understand.
Yeah.
You understand that when it's your own state's governor that's coming out and with a fake alien on podium.
Yeah.
That totally discredits.
Even he didn't want to admit it.
That totally discredits anything that anybody saw.
We weren't trying to ridicule people's concerns, but there was that element of building hysteria, which really needed to be dealt with.
I was 12, so imagine that age too. It was, I saw UFO guys. I mean, that's a different conversation when you're that age. All right, our own governor, who many people supported at the time, is going out and mocking what I saw. I kept to myself. It was absolutely a stigma, and I don't know why. I don't know why it's there, but we're gonna not talk about this right now because clearly it's just a joke to everybody.
I'm sorry if it offended some people, but it was a lot of fun.
There you go. This is your trophy, and you give it to Joe, okay? I'll see you all later. Thank you very much.
When you're in a position of authority and you can't explain something to your constituents, it could panic people, it could frighten people. So one of the tools in the toolbox, when they're forced to talk about it, is to ridicule it. It's a way of minimizing its significance. You know, oh, these are little green men, ha, ha, ha. That's the problem with the term UFO. It's sort of been contaminated.
If the Air Force had nothing to hide, Frank Manner, the Michigan farmer who had brought in the first report, was caught in the middle. He was mad.
Are you sorry now that you did tell people what you saw?
Yes, I am. I'm sorry because it's not the truth, but it's just the idea, the reaction of the people. They think you're a nut, tell you the truth. That's just what they figure you are.
Once Project Blue Book shut down in 1970, the whole thing kind of went quiet.
The conclusions of Project Blue Book were, no UFO reported has ever given any indication of threat to our national security. There is no evidence submitted that sightings represent technological developments beyond the range of present-day scientific knowledge. And there is no evidence indicating that these unidentified objects are extraterrestrial.
That report that they produced was known infamously as the Condon Report. Now, why is this important? Because they literally shot down the topic of UFOs, said it was a waste of time and money, and said, shut the investigations down. It's useless.
Think about the opportunities that were lost for taking it seriously and for investigating it.
The Air Force says it doesn't investigate unknown objects anymore. NORAD told UPN News 13 that it only tracks objects that originate in our atmosphere. The CIA, some other intelligence agency, well, if they're investigating, we don't know about it, and chances are we never will.
The U.S. government always maintained, to me, that they had no interest in UFOs. But back in 2008, I had discovered a United States Air Force manual, and there was a whole section about unidentified flying objects, on not only how to report them, but where to report them to. And the two places that are not subject to the Freedom of Information Act, one being the White House, the second being the NORAD installation, is on the receiving end of whatever these UFO reports are. And I tried to access the documents, but of course, they said, nope, sorry, we're not subject to the Freedom of Information Act. How convenient that they send the UFO records to that one place.
Believers have always maintained the government knows more than it claims about UFOs and doesn't always tell the truth. The latest government admissions concede both points and do little, if anything, to settle the UFO debate.
About the Phoenix Lights, I'm extremely disappointed that nobody's taken this on. I think that the governor was interested in all of it. When you look at the press conference that he did, you can see he was truly uncomfortable. And I think it was because he was not comfortable with that. I think he really did want to look into it. There's no way that he orchestrated that. And I said, there's something else going on here. My speculation is a deal had to be made.
We are now less than 12 hours away from Governor Simington's criminal trial. The governor is on trial for 22 fraud counts. 20 of those counts involve falsifying financial statements to federally insured banks.
The trial was the culmination of 7.5 years of investigation of Fife Symington's private life before becoming governor. Then it morphed into a criminal investigation.
He had been in court. People that were in court watching this whole thing said he was called out to go into a private meeting. And then the next thing is this emergency press conference. So somebody else said, in my opinion, okay, not fact, but my opinion, if you make this a joke, we'll dismiss the charges.
For instance, Barb would say that she didn't think it was your idea.
Yeah, I wonder where that came from.
Well, if I understand your question correctly, you're suggesting some people believe that we somehow did this in league with government authorities to mock the idea of those lights being extraterrestrial.
That maybe there was pressure from the military or the government?
No, there was no conspiracy behind it at all. No, we weren't trying to cover up anything. We were just trying to make light of it.
He was serious that he was going to do an investigation, and then it turned into a joke. Somebody somewhere has got to be afraid of the truth coming out. That's it. And why?
Neither then or now do I have any plausible explanation more than anyone might speculate about as to what those lights were. I felt then, as I do now, that what really caused a lot of the hullabaloo, to use the governor's word, and the speculation is that the only information provided by the authorities was implausible to anybody who saw the lights. So I think government makes things worse when it operates that way. And why they do that, I don't know. I don't know if it's just bureaucratic obtuseness or if it's some part of a larger attempt to deflect attention from things that are meant to remain secret. My best guess at it was some sort of high altitude stealth technology that we didn't want known.
You and I will always disagree on this, but there's no way that was a B-2 bomber or a stealth bomber. This object was big and close.
And you think it was a single object for
yeah,
sure?
Yeah.
There's no way that something like that's man-made that we know of.
Right.
Now,
that's right.
I don't know if it could have been extraterrestrial, whatever. Regardless, it is what it is. We saw what we saw. It was giant, quiet, moved extremely fast, and was amazing.
There's a creation of discourse around these events. Pop culture today is going to represent these UFO events, for want of a better word, as something quite different than how the people experience them.
Wow, look at this hair, these three things.
Oh, really?
What is it?
Remember, I'm a historian of Catholicism. So in the 1980s, Pope John Paul II wrote a very interesting teaching on the angels to his bishops. It's called the Catechesis on the Angels. And he basically says, these are invisible beings, and people don't believe in them anymore, and they even denied them during Jesus's time, Jesus's era. He said, but they exist. And he said, and they intervene in human history. He was kind of reinscribing this idea that what we see today is not what we think we're seeing. Our perceptions see objects, but what are really there? We're coming upon a new way of understanding the transcendent, and it's no longer an angel.
What would it mean for our humanity for us to discover that, in fact, there are other sentient beings that are capable of traveling here? The things that we think are important in the midst of the ongoing pandemic or the uprising for racial justice. In the specter of being visited by those from another planet, our own divisions would suddenly feel so much smaller, would feel less insurmountable, one would hope. I don't know what that would look like, but I do know that it would be the biggest change that we ever witnessed, any of us, in the way that human beings saw themselves and saw each other.
I was a Top Gun graduate, senior air controller, had 18 years seat time. We were going to do a big, huge air defense exercise, a mock air battle for training purposes. This encounter profoundly affected me.
So many people saw this.
Oh, yeah. The entire crew was talking about it, you bet.
Oh, my gosh, dude. Wow.
They certainly didn't behave like anything from this Earth. I'm pretty convinced they had to be quantum-based. If that's true, then what are the possibilities It's a pretty short list, isn't it?
What's on that list?
Aliens.
And they're coming for you, aliens, aliens. They're coming for you. What you gonna do when they come for you? They got their probes and their big long fingers. They're gonna take you in your ship and they're gonna abuse you sexually. Aliens, what you gonna do? What you gonna do when they come for you? You know what? I just ad-libbed that. Right, folks, next hour, visit our friends once again over at Sasquatch Chronicles. Again, thanks to Patrick Cornelius Rabbit III for directing me to that website. I forgot what story we're covering or what story Wes is covering. So we'll let Wes let you know after the top of the hour. Don't forget, we are 100% listener supported. So head on over to freedomslips.com. Freedom's Lips is a common spelling in your favorite internet browser. When you get there, you have a number of ways to support us. The easiest way is just to click on the old donations tab. That's your first step. Become a Patreon, the donor box, direct payment, North America only. We have some cryptocurrency options, or you can simply write a check. Bottom of the page is the full postal mailing address. All right, here comes the top of the hour music. We will talk with all you fine folks in 3 to 5 minutes. Thanks for listening.
You. If you're not in control, then someone else is. Join me, Ivy West, for Voices on the Wind, Saturday. I discuss government, health, metaphysics, suppressed science, universal mysteries, little-known incredible facts, alternative energies, and even more than you can imagine. Won't you join us on Revolution Radio Saturdays? For Voices on the Wind, with me, Ivy West.
There are lives in the balance, people on the fire, children at the cannons. There are...
Because if your head's in the sand, your tail is a target.
Thank you for listening to Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the Internet. Please help support this station so this battle can continue forward. Revolution Radio!
Join me and the Brian Ruse Show on Revolution Radio, Eastern Standard Time, every Tuesday night from 6 to 8. We talk about the four most vital things, in my view, affecting all of humanity. Number one is UFOs and aliens and their agenda for the advancement of humanity. Number two is the Jewish establishment's control over all aspects of human civilization. Number three, the truth about Adolf Hitler, how he was the opposite of what we've been told. Number four is Advanced Ancient Global Civilizations. Join me on the Brian Ruse Show, Tuesday nights from 6 to 8 on Studio B on Revolution Radio.
Thank you. Thank you for listening to Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. Any commercial advertising you may hear in this program is of the sole discretion and benefit of the host of this program you are listening to. Revolution Radio does not endorse any commercial products, nor does it accept monetary compensation for on-air advertising of commercial products, nor will it ever. We are and shall remain 100% listener supported. Any product advertising on this program are considered used at higher risk, and Revolution Radio shall not be held liable for any claims or damages received from any product advertised within this program. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps. The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates. You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
All right, friends, Sasquatch Chronicles, episode 894. I was being stalked.
Let's jump into it tonight. I want to welcome Brian to the show. Brian, thanks for coming on.
Yeah, no problem. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thanks again for being here.
All right,
and
friends,
gosh, I've heard so many encounters from veterans who trained at Fort Lewis of running into these creatures. Let's know you're probably in your 20s, you know, when this happened to you. At that time, what was kind of your thoughts on Sasquatch?
I mean, to be completely honest, I watched X-Files as a kid. So, you know, I think I always had a little bit of interest in it, or at least I think a basic knowledge of what the idea or the lore is of Sasquatch or Big, whatever you want to call it. But as far as would I seek it? No. And, you know, did I really believe it? Uh-uh.
Well, if you would take us back to that night, kind of tell us what you were doing and what'd you guys end up seeing?
So this was 2005. Before we go on deployments, usually you get new guys into the units throughout the year and just, you know, randomly sometimes. So when you do deployments, we call it a spin up, and basically we start training 6 months out. And really it's to get the young guys or the new guys, you know, accustomed to what we're doing. You know, what you're doing out there is important and everybody has to be on the same page. You know, and then just working together with people helps you also be able to just almost predict them. You know, when you're out there with those guys, you have to know what someone's going to do without knowing what they're going to do. It has to be an instinctive kind of thing. There's a bond, you know? So we were on doing a field training exercise and we were out at Yakima, which, you know, when we talked, you said, of course, you know, you've heard, I've heard, I think everyone's heard a story from the range. So we were out there. It was a multi-day exercise. I was in a five-man element. I was a gun leader. So basically I had the big machine gun, but that doesn't mean anything on these training exercises because they're blanks. It's not a real bullet. We were out there and we were tracking what we thought was the Op-4 element, opposing forces, the bad guys, the guys who were supposed to be finding and, you know, fighting against and training with. And we thought, like I said, like we thought we were tracking people. And when I say tracking, you know, we're using night vision, and this is 2005. Night vision is not what it is on Call of Duty today. You know, the night vision back then was like one monocular and there's no depth perception and you can't see more than like maybe, you know, 50 yards on the best conditions possible. So when I say tracking, what I meant was we knew that we could see something. And in our minds, the only thing out there is the other guys. And it, you know, it didn't cross my mind until midway through the encounter, but we came up over this ridge, and you know out there, those forests, they're so dense, and you know, sometimes you can't see but 4 feet in front of you and broad daylight. And then sometimes at night you get lucky and you can see for a distance, and nothing crazy, but you can just see, and you can make out silhouettes and outlines. You know, your eyes adjust. So we come up over this ridge, and basically on the other side of the draw, there's something. I thought it was a guy. I'm not gonna lie. You know, we thought it was another dude. What struck me as weird was that he, at that point, what I believed, was wearing a ghillie suit. And you know, a ghillie suit, military sniper suit. They're made of the burlap with the strands. And that's kind of my first red flag in that situation was, well, wait, there's no snipers out here. Why is there a guy wearing a ghillie suit? I know what these guys are carrying. I was with them, you know, 12 hours ago. We all have the same gear and no one has a ghillie suit. So that was my first, like, but you know, you kind of just put that away because, you know, of course, I don't think I'm hunting Sasquatch at this point. So we come up, we look, and we see it. And I thought for some reason or just whatever, because of night vision, and distortions, that the terrain was maybe playing a trick on me, because I also noticed this is a big guy. My immediate thought was 7.5 feet tall. And that's when I said, okay, so that's not right. That can't be right. You know, okay, this is the terrain, it's the distance, it's night vision. But there's things you can look at to gauge. You know, you can look at a tree and kind of figure out like how big that tree is compared to the tree you're next to, and gauge someone's height. And, you know, it just kept coming back 7.5 feet. I was like, there's no way this is a really tall guy. I don't know anybody in the unit that's this tall. So, you know, that's my next red flag is what the hell? So again, you're still not thinking that this is anything other than another person. And we push up. So we come down to the other side through the draw. And the whole time this thing is just backing off, and it's staying just far enough out of sight that you can't get a real read on what it was. But we knew it was there. You know, there's five of us. We knew it was there. Everyone saw it. There's no disagreement that there was something. So we're running up, and at this point, we're kind of confused. Everyone's starting to scratch their head because why aren't we getting lit up? That's the whole point of this exercise, is to engage each other. And why is there one person almost seemingly like just observing? And that, you know, that was weird. But again, you know, you think to yourself, you know, we used a tactic like that in Afghanistan, in the Middle East. We would use a scout to lure out, you know, the enemy to come and find us. And that's how we would grab them. So, you know, in your head, you're still just not thinking that that's what's going on. Well, at this point, we've been kind of playing tag with this thing for, you know, 2 or 3 hours. You know, we would see it. We'd push up. You know, when I say push up, we would go forward. We would try and engage, and it would just retreat. And it was like, and it would retreat just far enough that we couldn't see it from, you know, a few meters. And then we'd, you know, like I said, we would crest another switchback or come back across another little hill or something, or there'd be an opening in those forests, and there it was. But you still couldn't see anything. You could just see an outline, and it was huge, you know. I mean, at least 4 feet shoulder to shoulder. And I mean, even right now, I'm still having like trouble, like trying to say like what, how big this thing was. It's big. And then it stood up, and I realized that the whole time, every time we had come up on it, it had been crouching. And when that thing stood up, it was a minimum of 9 feet tall, a minimum. And it stood up, and all what I can imagine looked directly at us. Again, you know, we're not close enough. I don't see face. I didn't get any eye glare or anything like that. No glowing eyes. I've heard that in some people. You know, nothing like that. It's far enough. It's also pitch black. We don't have any light. So there's nothing really to, get any eye shine. And it takes off. But I've hunted people. I hunted people for years in the military. Again, that doesn't sound right, but you know what I mean. You know, people hunt animals. You know how I know how a person runs, even now. I know now better than I knew then. It didn't move like a person. It was such a smooth locomotion. There was no, you know, there was no, you know, when a person runs and their whole body moves, there was none of that. None of that. And I could see it moving. So I could see what I believed were its legs moving, but it wasn't like a, I don't know. It was almost like a jaunt, not a run, not a jog, but like a walk. And it was silent. I mean, silent. And you're out there, you can hear, you could hear a bird fart out there at night in those places. And it was, I mean, dead silent, dead silent. We all kind of just looked at each other and, you know, what the hell? And I think that we just chalked it up to being up for maybe 2 or 3 days. And, you know, we used to have a saying, you know, talking to the wizard or seeing the wizard. And I think that we kind of just convinced each other at that point. Okay. You know, like, let's just do what we got to do. Let's just process this later. You know, we'll talk about it once we can. So, you know, we continue through the exercise and, you know, we get back and we finish the exercise and we start to talk to leadership. And, you know, that's always after action reports. There's always, we do what we call peer reviews and, you know, everyone kind of sits down in a room and, you know, we go over the good, the bad, the ugly. It's, you know, what did you do wrong? What did I do wrong? How do we fix it? How do we do better? And, you know, we kind of got dinged on the amount of time it took us to find the objective. And, you know, partially the reasoning for that was we were, you know, chasing the wizard, chasing something off into the woods that wasn't the enemy. It wasn't our objective. One of the senior leaders, he came over and he said, you know, what happened? What were you guys doing? And, you know, we didn't want to say anything, but, you know, he got it out of us. He's like, hey, like, you guys, what happened? So we told him our story. He looked us dead in the eyes and he said, you're not the first time. It's not the first time I've heard this. But my advice to you is if you want to stay in the military, that you forget what you saw and you never talk about it until no one knows that you were here. He said, that's my best advice for you, for your career. He said, you just don't want to get discharged for being crazy.
Yeah, that seems to be the response from the higher ups. You know, even pilots that see UFOs, it's like, you don't report it. You never saw it. When you guys were out there and you first noticed a creature, what was it doing? Was it just observing you guys?
Yeah, I just feel like it was watching us or just checking us out. You know, we were probably out farther than anyone else was at that point.
Yeah, and it wasn't just you, Brian. I mean, you were there with 4 or 5 guys. Did you ever talk with the guys afterwards? I mean, did the conversation ever come up? You know, it's 2005. Did you guys go, was that a freaking Bigfoot?
Oh, of course. It came up 100 million times in bars. And, you know, in helicopters, you know, 12-hour helicopter rides. I just think that, you know, I know that two guys are for sure still in, so I know they're not going to talk about it. And then the other two guys, you know, I haven't really talked to them in years, but the last time that we spent time together was probably 3 or 4 years ago, at one of the reunions, and we brought it up and it was like, hey, do you remember that? I think everyone kind of was just like, oh yeah, you know, like seeing the wizard. Crazy stuff. But, you know, we didn't hunt nothing. You know, like, I wasn't tracking nothing. I didn't see, you know, 5 of us didn't hallucinate the same nothing.
There's so much that happens on these bases. I think the general public will be shocked how many current and former soldiers have seen these things running around on the base. I wanted to ask you, I know you can only speculate and I can only speculate, but anyone can walk on a military base or military reservation, however you want to word it, like Fort Lewis. You can walk on there. I don't recommend it, but you can. And they find you, they're going to get you, they're going to escort you off very quickly. And second time, they may not be quite as nice as they might be the first time if you do it again. And what's strange is these things are running around on the base. And the answer you get from the leadership is the same every time. Just keep your mouth shut. You didn't see a thing. Why do you think that is?
I think that there has to be knowledge. If a senior, and when I said senior leader, who I spoke to, you know, I mean, at that point I was a nothing, you know, I was an E3 nobody. And, you know, so senior to me was the 27-year-old, you know, sergeant first class. You know, and that's a 27-year-old guy who's been around for a while, who's heard this story. So if there's, you know, guys who've been career officers at these bases, they've heard the story. Why they don't acknowledge it, I don't know. You know, I can only speculate, but I would say that it probably has something to do with, if the military can't keep its own bases secure, then what else is it incapable of securing?
Yeah, that's a good point. You know, every government, US, UK, every government around the world is power hungry. And the one thing you don't want to show is that you don't have any control. And I kind of think that's what the UFOs in the skies are, the reason why, because, you know, the US, for example, they're not going to tell people that, well, we don't know what the hell's going on in the skies. We can't shoot them down. We can't, you know. There's really no protection. And I kind of think the same thing with Sasquatch. I often wonder sometimes if even the government's like, we can't control these things. And I had a high ranking, when he retired, he was very high. He was a colonel. And he was telling me about an encounter he had at Fort Lewis back in the 80s. And what was strange is he actually did report it. And when he went to report it, he went to an Air Force guy to report it, which made no sense. Because he wasn't in the Air Force, but he goes to an Air Force guy, and basically what the guy told him almost word for word is what the guy in charge in your situation said. Almost word for word, said the exact same thing.
Exactly. I mean, but that's the situation in the military. You know, they can say that to you about anything. You know, anything. They can say, if you want a career, keep your mouth shut. They own you. So what are you going to do? You know, I was in love with what I was doing at that point in my life. So, you know, I definitely didn't want to lose it. And, you know, I was in a pretty, pretty prestigious unit. So it was, you know, it was a coveted position to have, you know, and so we didn't want to mess it up. We were just kids.
Yeah, no, I get it, man. And it's same reason, like I said, the same reason pilots don't report UFOs, because, you know, you don't want to lose your gig. I get completely where you're coming from. I really enjoy encounters that happen on military bases, because it's always the same thing. You guys are kind of doing training, war games. I don't say war games in a derogatory way, but you know what I mean. And you guys are out there with blanks. It's like, and then they run in, you know, these soldiers run into these creatures on these bases, and it's like, what are you going to do? I mean, you have blanks.
Like, the way that thing moved, it could have been on us in a heartbeat. And I don't think there's anything any of us could have done to stop it. And we weren't little guys. You know, I'm 6'4". I was a big dude back then. And there's nothing I could have done to stop that thing.
Yeah, thank God it wasn't aggressive. It was kind of retreating from you guys. Let me ask you, Brian. I ask everyone on the show, and there's no wrong answer because no one knows. But what do you think Sasquatch is?
A part of me says it's physical. I don't think that it's, you know, supernatural in origin. I think that the world is big enough that there are things that we still don't know. Like I told you, we were in places that, like, you know, that touch areas that humans just haven't gone. You know, you take a 3-hour helicopter ride just any direction at Yakima, and you're in the middle of nowhere. And I can't guarantee you that humans have been in any of those places. So what's to say there's not something out there that we just don't know about? No one's ever proven it. to be not real to me now. I have more, you know, I have more proof in my eyes that it is real than it's not.
Yeah, I get it. And that's a fair answer. You know, a lot of times people go, well, it's a non-human primate we just haven't caught up with. And I don't know how much I buy into that, but I love that answer. And I want that person to be right. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. I don't want it to be like, you know, something malicious. But I also didn't feel that it was malicious. You know, nothing about it was aggressive. Creepy for sure, but not aggressive. But I've heard of aggressive encounters. You know, I know some guys have an interesting story from the Middle East about one that was aggressive. But, you know, again, I wasn't there, so I can't verify whether any of it really happened. But the story was interesting. But that's not what I felt. I just, you know, not curiosity, but maybe just, what are you doing?
I get it completely. Usually on a military basis, for whatever reason, they're really not aggressive. It's more of that watching and observing type behavior. Would you want to see another one again?
I think if my answer is yes, if for no other reason than to make myself believe that I didn't hallucinate something, or that, you know, the five of us didn't hallucinate something.
Yeah, that's a very common reaction, very common feeling a lot of eyewitnesses have, especially after an encounter. What you'll find most of them will say is, if it wasn't aggressive anyway, they'll say, yeah, I'd like to see one again, just so I could, you know, there's that doubt even after you see it of like, God, did I just have a stroke? Am I losing it? And what you guys saw, you know, you're talking 7.5 feet squatted down, and then it stands up and it's over 9 feet tall. And I've said this before in the past, you know, your average home, the ceilings are about 8 feet up, just on your average normal home. And you're talking another foot and a half above that as far as what you're seeing. And it's huge. It's hard to really, you know, people always ask, why didn't you take a picture? Why didn't you shoot it? Why didn't you do this? Why? It's easy to do that from the sidelines and make those comments. But when you're in the moment, your first reaction is shock. You know, you don't really know where to place what you're seeing. There's nothing makes sense.
I've never seen anything like it or since. Never. And it just almost doesn't compute sometimes. You know, I can, if I close my eyes, I can picture the silhouette and the outline, but it's just like, it doesn't make, it's fleeting. You know what I mean? Like, it just, it's almost like my brain is like, come on, man, you didn't really see that. But I saw it. It was there. There's no question in my mind. I would definitely want to see one. And maybe, you know, maybe not in the middle of the woods where nobody can come help me with not any bullets. So that thing was huge. And I've heard you ask people, you know, like you just said, why didn't you shoot it? What the hell would a bullet have done to that thing? There was nothing that I had that, even if I had live ammunition, there's nothing that we had that would have stopped that thing before it took out at least one of us. There's nothing we could have done. I mean, it would have gone very, very badly.
Yeah, a lot of things can go south when you start engaging with these things. And yeah, I couldn't agree more. I really appreciate you taking the time to come on and share what happened to you. And thank you so much for your service to the country.
Yeah, no problem. Thank you.
Next up on the show, I want to welcome John. John, thanks for coming on.
No problem.
Yeah, man, and I'm excited to have you on. I know your encounter took place in 2017 in Pikeville, Kentucky. It's near the West Virginia border. If you would, just start from the very beginning. What were you doing, and what happened?
Well, I was trying to get back in shape because for several years I developed a seizure disorder. Being in the mountains and being an avid hiker in the past, I really wanted to get back into it. Also, I wanted to go up into the hills and pray. Anyways, I had decided the day before that I was going to get up early and hike up this mountain, watch the sun come up and pray. And anyway, so the apartment complex I was staying at was an old abandoned coal mine that had been shut down in the 1950s. And so they had taken out all the mining equipment and everything and built these really nice complexes. But they left the old coal road, and the coal road went up around the complex. And on the other side of this mountain, is an interstate highway going to West Virginia. Anyway, so I'm hiking up there, and it's pitch black out. And it started when I got about 200 feet up this road. And now I can look back and I can see the complex clear as day. The farm lamps are going. So it's pretty illuminated down there. Anyway, so I get 200 feet. First thing that happens is I start hearing a big bird, a really, really big, loud bird. And I can't mimic it, but sound bites that I've heard of people recording these things, it is almost spot on, you know. I mean, it really sounds like an 800 plus pound bird. And it really disturbed me because this noise is like 10 feet or so from me up into the thicket on this going up the hill and looking down at me. I can't see anything, so I just kept going, and it just got more and more insistent. And what really disturbed me is the pace that it kept with me. It kept perfect pace with me, yet I'm not hearing anything trudging alongside this mountain going up. There's no leaves, no stomping, any of that. Anyway, so as I continued, this bird whistling continued. Then pebbles started chucking at me and landing perfectly in front of me every single time. Nothing actually hit me. That's when I stopped, and I'm starting to get nervous because, you know, I've heard the stories of the pebble throwing and that, and I thought, well, this can't be happening. This, you know, come on. What are the odds? So I continue in just ignoring it for a while until, I don't know, it had to have been a half pound rock just whirled right at my feet. And I stopped and I'm okay. All right. So I picked it up and I chucked it back at it, not thinking. And I yelled, you know, is anybody there? Are you messing with me? You know, you never know who's up in them hills. And nothing. Instead, the bird whistling just got even more aggressive sounding and almost agitated sounding. I don't know. I was insistent because, you know, I don't want to be in my mind paranoid or anything. And so I continued up. And the pebble throwing continued, the whistling continued. And looking back at it, I probably should have turned around. I probably should have. It's not that I, you know, ever disbelieved, which isn't even a good word for this, but I'm discounted the reality or the potential of these creatures existing. But it was one of those things. I wanted to hide. And number two, I mean, what are the odds? That's why I just kept asking myself, what would the odds be? So I continue up, and I got about 400 feet up. Up there, it comes to a bend, and you go another, you know, 200 or so feet up. And the pebble throwing got more aggressive as I'm going up there. But then what first started freaking me out, so the bird sound is happening right at my side. And then it's happening about 50 feet ahead. And then it's happening 25 feet in between, and then there's several of them going. And pebbles are being thrown from all that direction. I don't know what it was, but something overcame me when I came to that bend. Do not go on that bend. And I stopped and, you know, I took a knee and I'm thinking about it. And I realized something is pushing me along into an ambush. That's how I felt. Because it really dawned on me that there are several things watching me. So very scrutinizingly, my adrenaline started to spike. And so I started to pray out loud. Because at this point, if I had tried to book it, there's no way. If this were a coyote situation or a bear, they would get me. You know, it's a long run down there. And so I slowly started to walk backwards. And you can only do that so far without falling back and killing yourself. So I'm trying to do it kind of halfway, so my back isn't completely turned to whatever this is. As I'm going down, a big stick, I mean a really big stick, hurled right onto the coal road. What weirded me out is that it was thrown from the thicket, but yet it landed perfectly pointing at me. I don't know if that's just a coincidence, but it's just odd is what it was. As I'm going down, the sun, I'm starting to see pink in the horizon, peeking out. And for some reason, thank God that's happening. But I was hoping that maybe it would illuminate what's happening and make it stop. But then the pebbles start hurling again at pace with me. And then I start hearing real trudging happening. Real aggressive trudging. I mean, this man was like a freight train coming down into that holler. And I thought, oh, God in heaven. They're just going to jump out onto this coal road and drag me into these woods. And so I tried to pick up pace without running. And the chirping, the whistling, the rock throwing, I mean, it just got ever more intense. And finally, when I make it down, I'd say 100 feet, I just said to hell with it, and I ran. I don't know what it was, but something just told me, run. Run with everything you have. And as soon as I made it underneath that barn light and slid, I grabbed a hold of that light post and whirled myself around it. And there's nothing. I surely thought I was going to see something. There was absolutely nothing. But I could hear all the trudging and rustling and whistling still over there. And finally, I backed up more and more and more. And whatever these were went from being at that 100-foot level to within just 10, not even 10 seconds at 200 feet and then 300 feet. And I could just hear them going all the way up that hill. The speed that which they maneuver, no person can do that. I mean, there's no way that some redneck is going to be able to do that, even growing up in those hollers.
Yeah, and that's what I try and tell people. Just because you see one, it's never alone. I mean, most of the time they're never alone, not always, but you know what I mean. I think they travel around. If there's one, there's probably two or three nearby. What's strange, though, is none of the pebbles, none of the log, nothing actually hit you as you were leaving or going up.
No. And that's what shocked me. That really surprised me, the accuracy. Always, I would say, 6 inches from between my feet is where these things were landing. And I don't understand that. I don't understand the logic behind it. And how they can be that accurate. through the thicket, you know.
I know this is in 2017, but what did you think was going on now that you're back at the apartment, you're away from this situation? Kind of what do you do next?
Honestly, you know, I went right online trying to figure out what it was, trying to rationalize it. In the end, I didn't want to say what I thought it was. You know, I didn't want to say this was a Sasquatch. I didn't see anything. Just, you know, a bunch of things just didn't add up in my mind, because whatever these were did not behave like an animal should behave in my mind, you know? And I mean, after that, I mean, the next day in daylight, I went up there. I went all the way to the top, and that's about 500 or so feet. I didn't have anything. No weird experiences. I took my camera, and I'm like, you know, let's see, you know, maybe I'll catch something in the backdrops, you know, just aimlessly taking pictures, you know. I didn't see or experience anything, but what I did get notice when I got way up there were weird structures. Weird, where you had two 15-foot almost logs that from deadwood that had been put up like triangles with a third one as a support. And I'm looking, and I saw up there around 14 or 15 of these things. And what I couldn't figure out is how they're holding up, okay, because it gets windy in these hills. And I couldn't figure it out. And so I poked one with a stick, seeing if it would just fall over. Would it fall over? I mean, I really would have had to. And then I noticed the center one had been jammed into the earth. I mean, literally just plunged into the ground. The one I found, and this one really weirded me out. And this one was way up in the woods. But this one was a small tree that had been uprooted. And the roots were still intact. Almost in the same pattern. I never saw what I thought was a shelter or anything, but and the other thing I saw constantly were tree breaks. And they were all aiming toward the complex. I didn't mess with any of it, tried to take any of it down. And then late March going into April, I would go out of the complex to smoke, and I'm standing in the parking lot, and pebbles started being tossed, again, right at my feet. I would hear the bird whistling on occasion. And so, you know, since I'm so close to my apartment, I threw them back. And it would just continue on and on. But the whistling never got aggressive like it had that night, that morning. But the thing that, with the parking lot that really weirded me out was when I tossed it, something had thrown this really big one one evening. And when I threw it back, the bird whistling happened. It's kind of like a jagged, you know, hillside, you know, where they had stripped, you know, for mining. And so it's about 15 feet of rock until you have actual earth. Right at the tree line of that whistling just erupted very aggressively. I'm looking, I walked right up to it, which looking back is stupid, but I'm trying to see because I'm like, am I crazy? I can't see anything. And I shined a flashlight right on there and there's nothing. But I go back to where I had been by my car and I hear trudging. And this thing moved again within just a matter of seconds. It's at 200 feet and it's just going. I can see the trees and saplings shaking. But the one night, and this was April, I and another priest, we had dinner together and then we went out to this picnic area to smoke. And we're just, you know, talking about theology and our work. And Well, it was getting cold, and so we decided to go back. And this is just a big open area. We're not in the woods. We're in illumination from those farm lights. And as we're going, we feel this boom, 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 like something's stomping. And I nearly fell over. And he almost fell over from it. And there is this god-awful scream slash howl. The only thing I can compare it to in my mind is like a bear mixed with a wolf, with a witch and a lion. I mean, I could feel the vibration I could just feel it in my organs. And being an epileptic, I got disorientated from it. I'm very sensitive to pitches and things. I can't go to concerts. And this disorientated me, but I leaped. I'm telling you, there's nothing even around me. I'm in the open. And I leaped 4 feet in the air screaming. I lost all control. I just started screaming. He lost it and started screaming. So you have two priests in their cassocks running back through this open area like their dresses and jumping onto a picnic table. Screaming like women. Worse than women. And I don't know what overcame me, but right at this table was a broom, and I just swept this broom into my hands with the bristles outward like a spear. I don't know what I was going to do with it, but I think it was just spontaneous reaction and pure fear. And we're standing there on top of these tables looking. Where is it? Where is it? We can't see anything. Everyone's in bed. It's a work night, you know. And we also don't want to, as odd as this sounds, we didn't want to wake up the entire complex. And at first, you know, we're trying to rationalize this because we actually were dealing with our church work with an exorcism case. So for a moment we thought, you know, is this spiritual? You know, is this a demonic manifestation? And so we lit up, you know, another cigarette, and we're contemplating this, calming ourselves down. And finally, I just said, you know what, let's go back. We go back, the roar started again. We looked at each other, and I said, Patrick, this is no demon. This is an animal. We're looking. And we still cannot see it, though. But here and there, we felt these stomps. I mean, we literally can feel the vibration in the earth and into our bodies. And there's absolutely nothing. I'm like, my God, we own guns, but they're in the apartment. And whatever this is, we tried 6 to 8 times that night to get back into the apartment. It would not let us.
How far away is the apartment from the picnic tables where you guys are at?
1,000+ feet.
And when you say it wouldn't let you leave, was it just the roaring and the vocalizations would take off, or, you know, would explode the moment you guys would try and leave?
Every time we try to make it, just very gradual, casual-like, trying to get back to the complex, it would start screaming. And we were convinced that whatever this was going to attack us. We're terrified that, you know, we were going to get mauled by it. And so literally, we were out there from 11:45 at night until 6 in the morning and freezing. I mean, it got down to about 38 degrees that night. And it wouldn't let us near our cars. It wouldn't let us near the apartment building. And so literally, we're just standing out at this picnic table, literally all night smoking, scared to death. We just waited it out. And what's weird, as soon as the sun came up, to where everything, you know, is lit by the sun, right? We hear this crash through the trees behind the landlord's house. And we see the trees swaying and moving. Again, you know, it just jumped, you know, a couple hundred feet, you know, in a matter of seconds. And but what really disturbed us, again, at the base of that hill is about 15 feet of rock. So whatever this was able to leap up there past 15 feet of rock. And I don't know if it, like, you know, kind of Spider-Man'd it or what it did, but no person can do that. And it dumbfounded us. And we went over behind the landlord's house looking, and his wife came out in her nightgown and robe. And she said, "What are you two doing?" And we told her, and she yelled at her husband that, you know, "Honey, these priests just dealt with, you know, the wild people all night." And I said, "Uh-huh, of the wild people?" And she said, "You know, the Bigfoots." So then she tells us that once in a while that she would leave out a blackberry cobbler and things on occasion when they would get really restless and acting up, or as she put it, acting a fool up there. She'd take their four-wheeler up into the hill, and she'd leave a pie or a cobbler or something, and that they would calm down. Now, the thing, now that was a bad night. We were scared to death because we didn't know. And here and there, you heard grunting and snorting like an angry bull. But for some reason, this will sound weird, but based off of the voice, it really, I think it was a female. That sounds odd in my mind based off of its behavior. But there was this feminine quality to it that really made us think of, like, you know, you're like the Wicked Witch of the West.
Yeah, I get what you mean. I totally get that. And I've heard that tone before where you, in your mind, you're like, that sounds like a female, even though, I mean, in my mind, that's aggressive as hell as far as you guys being out there and just smoking and not even being up in the wooded area. I realize the wooded area isn't far from there. When it crashed, as the sun was coming up, did you guys ever see anything, or was it mainly just the trees moving?
Just the trees and the bushes. And that weirded us out, because whatever this is had to be huge. It had to be. And I'm telling you, I have participated in exorcisms. I have seen crazy things, and this scared me to death. I've never been more scared in my life. Pure helplessness. I hear a lot of people say that they have a sense of evil. I didn't sense evil. I just sensed that this was a pure predator. I'm not saying I was the prey. I feel like for some reason our presence agitated it. It did not like us. Because I asked neighbors, "Have you had anything, you know, chase you around here at night?" "No, no." And for some reason, I feel like it targeted me. And the only thing I can think of is going up there that morning.
Yeah, that could have been what set the thing off. It's weird that the neighbors, you know, they already knew about it. She's feeding them. I'm curious, how long did you live at this place after this incident?
Till June. Till June. And fortunately, my work was completed, and they asked, "You want to stay?" "Nope. I want to send me somewhere else." And I went to Louisville.
Yeah, I don't blame you. I would have left too. Thank God your mission work was done. You didn't have to stay there any longer. Why do you think these creatures didn't harm you that first night that you were going up there?
I don't know. It really bothers me. I don't understand, what did I did wrong? I mean, if this were a bear or something, I could figure out what I did, you know?
Yeah, their behavior in this situation, and again, this is my opinion. I don't know one way or another, but if I were to guess, they were trying to prevent you from going up into that area. And as you were leaving, they were making sure you were still, that's why it was still aggressive as you were leaving. They just wanted you out of the area. That's what I think happened. Let me ask you, John, after this experience, I ask everyone on the show, what do you think Sasquatch is? And obviously there's no wrong answer, but what are your thoughts? What do you think Sasquatch is?
Well, I've had a lot to think about with this. I honestly think it's an animal. I want to lean for some reason toward a more paranormal stance. I'm not close to it, but because there are things that don't make sense that animals do not do. They're not capable to our knowledge of doing. Unless we, you know, go into spiritualism of some kind. But as a priest, we're taught to look at things with a duality. Everything is both physical as well as spiritual. And I definitely believe there is some type of spiritual something or other going on with it. I don't know what it is.
Yeah, your struggle is my struggle, John. I mean, they have an appearance of an animal. They act like an animal. But then at times they don't act like animals. And then all the weird stuff that goes on. And what a terrifying night you had out there, a terrifying couple nights out there. And I'm glad you're not in that position anymore. And I really want to thank you for taking the time to come on.
Oh, you're welcome.
And that's it for tonight, everyone. Remember, if you've had an encounter, shoot me an email. My email address is wes@sasquatchchronicles.com. And if you get a chance, check out sasquatchchronicles.com. You can become a member and get additional shows. Until next time, everyone.
Ladies and gentlemen, excuse me, that concludes the UFO Bigfoot Monday edition on This, That, and the Other. Heard every Monday and Thursday. Almost forgot when the show's on. Every Monday and Thursday here in Revolution Radio, Studio B from 6 p.m. Central until 8 p.m. Central, or 5 to 7 Central time. Wait, no, it's 6 to 8 East Coast, 5 to 7 Central. See, that's what happens when I try to do other time zones. It doesn't work. It does not work. Listen, what does work is supporting us. So head over to freedomslips.com. Common spelling in your favorite internet browser. At the homepage, you can click on the donations tab. And there, my fine feathered friends, you will locate and look at and peruse a number of options to support us. One is become a Patreon. There is the donor box. We do have a direct payment for North America only. We have a couple, a few cryptocurrency options. Or the bottom of the page, you can write a check and buy a 85-cent stamp or whatever the stamps go for nowadays. And it'll make its way to Allen, Michigan. Also, and I say this pert near, as my grandfather used to say, every week. If you click on the schedule, and scroll down through Hawk's Nest into Studio B, then to Studio, I'm sorry, Studio A, then to Studio B, you'll see on Studio B as well as a number of open slots. What that means, kiddies, is say, for instance, you're a very, very early riser, East Coast time, and you get up at 2:30 a.m. Well, you could have your own award-winning show from 3 a.m. till 5 a.m. Monday through Friday. Why? Because they're open slots. So how do you get an open slot? Well, what you do is you find one, and then you click on the contact tab, and you send an email to Lady Horse as well as the Mad Painter. Tell them who you are, the studio you're interested in hosting a program, a little bit about yourself, a little bit about the program, and pretty soon you'll have yourself an interview with the host review team via Skype. Easy peasy, lemon squeezy, don't get any on ya, hasta lasagna. That's how it works, kiddies. That's how it works. That's how it worked for me. And it can work the same for you. All right. Hope you enjoyed the program. We will speak with you on, Christmas Eve? Thursday is the 23rd. Yeah, no, it's Friday. I'm sorry. I'll speak with you on Christmas Eve. This Thursday, the 22nd. So listen, go finish your Christmas shopping. And that's all I got. That's all I got, kids. Thanks for listening. In the words of Katie Couric, good night, y'all.
Join me on the Brian Ruse Show on Revolution Radio, Eastern Standard Time, every Tuesday night from 6 to 8. We talk about the four most vital things, in my view, affecting all of humanity. Number one is UFOs and aliens and their agenda for the advancement of humanity. Number two is the Jewish establishment's control over all aspects of human civilization. Number three, the truth about Adolf Hitler, how he was opposite of what we've been told. Number four is Advanced Ancient Global Civilizations. Join me on the Brian Ruse Show, Tuesday nights from 6 to 8 on Studio B on Revolution Radio.
Travels to Earth through the rainbow crystal bubbles from the furthest reaches of space and time, across the dimensions, through the elements, and in harmony with the colors of the universe. Through her mastery of abstract stream of consciousness malapropisms, she weaves a web of comic, satiric, cosmic conversation. Her subjects can range from Norman, the goose next door, to astrology and earth changes, and into the deep recesses of the soul matrix. She holds a wealth of knowledge on herbs, plants, and astrology. Join Mona and her guests on Adventures of a Feral Hippie as she touches the earthly radio waves 5 days a week at 2 p.m. Monday to Friday on Studio B at Revolution Radio.
Hello, my name is Mr. Rowe. I am the host of Reality Extraction on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. I utilize logic, intellect, and magic.